Can I go ahead and get started? Yes, I'm seeing nods. Great.
Yes.
So we'll move this month's information items. We have a number of program modifications. We have one graduate program modification in the Masters of Education in Early Childhood Education. This one has been approved by Graduate Council. Are there any questions? I'm trying to look and see if there's a hand raised. I don't see a hand raised. No questions? So then we'll go ahead and move to item number two. Moving on, we have six modifications to undergraduate programs that have been approved by UKUI. And I now understand that UKUI is not like UKUI. It stands for University Committee on Undergraduate Instruction. So we have a program modification in SHS to a holistic health minor to require the former elective courses 4450 and 4460 and removing 4420 and increasing and decreasing elective credits. We have another in CAS, English BA, and you can go ahead and read over these. Program modification to CAS in linguistics, program modification in the health sciences BS, a program modification to CAS, and another program modification to CAS in English. Are there any questions about the six modifications before you? I hear a microphone go on. Is there a question beyond that microphone? No? Okay, then we'll go ahead and move to item number three. And I'd like to introduce Kelly Snook, Jr., Senior Vice President of One Digital Retirement Services. Kelly's working with Oakland to ensure that its Oakland 403B plans are performing to the maximum levels possible. So thank you, Kelly. She guides an investment committee and a focus group, which is composed of all employee groups, including two faculty members, Ken Mitten and Dave Dulio. The focus group provides valuable input and feedback to the investment committee. Some of its key objectives, which will be discussed today, include creating an investment policy statement, reviewing current investment offerings for suitability, performance, and expense competitiveness, providing recommendations for new investment menu if current offerings are not optimal, and creating an investment committee to charter to detail its scope and purpose. Conducting quarterly meetings with the investment committee to review investment performance and provide recommendations to remove or add elements, if appropriate. Negotiating reductions in the expense ratios charged by TIAA and Fidelity, and reviewing and improving the performance of TIAA and Fidelity. So Kelly, could you give us those updates, please?
Sure, thank you, Britt, appreciate that. How quickly should I proceed through this deck?
You know, this is a new one for me. We do have time, so.
Okay, I'll move along and give me the move faster if you'd like. You could move to the next slide for me.
Can I just say that usually it's 10 to 15 minutes?
Okay, perfect.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you. So there's a lot of information here and I won't go through all of it. I'm just intending to give you an overview of why this project started and where we are with it. So it started as a result of a number of legislative changes, as well as some transparency that's come along with those. And unfortunately, also due to some litigation that has been occurring across the country with universities with regard to the retirement plan. So what we're going through right now at Oakland University is something that all universities are now that I'm aware of are undertaking. And so just to give you a quick history, there were some changes in 2008, Supreme Court ruling, which essentially said that an individual can sue a plan sponsor. Prior to that, it was understood that it had to be the plan. So with that, the litigation began, and in 2012, there were two pieces of Department of Labor issuances that had to do with transparency. One is 408B2, which meant every year the providers of retirement plan had to tell the plan sponsor what the costs were with the plan. So believe it or not, up until 2012, there was rarely any idea what anybody was paying for the retirement plan. And then also there's a document called a 404A5, which is related, but that goes to the individual. So you receive it every year, whether you're aware of it or not, but it tends to be a lengthy document and often not read, but it's intended to explain the fees associated with the plan. So with transparency came opportunity to reduce fees. And so the trend among other universities is to review their plan, which quite frankly, many plans have been around for a long, long time. And technology has changed as well, which allows for more efficiencies with the plan as well. So by reducing fees, streamlining the menu, improving the plan in general for the participants, the benefits go right to the bottom line for each participant. So if we go to the next slide. So there has been a process there was a committee established, and then the committee established a process and objectives. So the first thing was, what do we want to accomplish? And the stated objective is here, improve the outcomes for participants through leveraging the scale, so the size of the plan, creating efficiency, conducting regular investment performance reviews, and trying to influence optimal behavior for participants. So basically, I sum that up by saying we want to make the plan better for all the employees. So in order to do that, the first steps were to really understand what the market was like. So there was a lot of research done by the committee to understand that, knowing what's possible, what other colleges and universities were doing, what other colleges and universities were paying for their plan, what services are they getting, et cetera, et cetera. So that gave us a sense of what could be done. From there, you formulate a conversion plan to get from where we were to where we want the plan to go. And we're in the midst of that right now. And this is actually part of that process, which is talking with groups on campus, making them aware of what's coming and why before the communications start going out to everybody on campus. And that's the last step there is educate and communicate. And the next slide, please. So this is the next two slides talk about what's been done and some opportunities of other things to do. So I'll just go through this quickly. I mentioned it already. The Vice President of Finance and Administration is the individual that's the fiduciary to the plan. So ultimately that's who's responsible for the plan. That individual created a committee charter, which established this committee, the Retirement Plan Committee. And then the committee went through this process of creating an investment policy statement. So that's a written document that talks about how investments will be measured and monitored. Then we also looked at what's called a tool called a plan outcomes assessment tool. And simply put, what it does is we can take a look at, take each participant based on what their wage is, allocate an income replacement to that. So, you take the wage and you just say 80% income replacement at retirement. So that's your goal. And then of course that retirement has to stretch typically from age 67 to 90. And that's a moving target, as we know, with longevity. Then we can input what's been saved, what's being contributed by the university, what's being deferred by a participant. We can use Monte Carlo simulation to determine, based on capital market assumptions, what we expect the rates of return to be for each participant's portfolio based on how they're allocated. And then all that can be rolled up to give us a sense of whether each person is on target or not. It's rolled up to the committee for to create a baseline where we are now, and then the intent is to improve the retirement readiness of all the employees over time. And that's done through everything we've already talked about, reducing costs in the plan. So if you bring the cost down, that goes directly to an increase in your returns from your investments. Make the plan easier to use, and also think about other ways to reach out to people and get them information in the manner that they prefer to receive it. So the next slide, it talks a little bit about some of the things we've already done. So the new menu will have active managers, index managers, passive managers, and it won't be relegated just to TIAA or Fidelity funds. So the idea is we can now, with technology, open the menu up to many more investment managers, which creates additional diversification in the plan. And a focus group has also been put together. And that focus group we're using to bounce ideas and thoughts off of. And so we're on the next slide. The next two slides really is a letter that is going to be going out, I think at the end of the month is the plan, and that will be essentially the kickoff letter to everyone on campus to let everybody know what's been, what the committee has been working on, and that they're going to see some improvements and some changes with the plan in the coming months. There's going to be a significant price reduction on the plan. So it's already been negotiated with TIA and Fidelity to reduce costs significantly. And so all of that is going to be talked about through written communication, through town hall meetings, which, you know, it sounds like will likely be Zoom meetings at this point in time. The committee wanted to make this group aware of this as well. So I think I got all that done in under 10 minutes. Are there any questions or comments?
Anyone have any questions?
This is Leila Gesus. So I understand they will be opened up, but for example, those of us who are happy with TIA CREF can continue to invest in the same funds and continue the same plans?
It's going to be a new, so there will be some what's called legacy contracts with TIA. So if you have one of the legacy contracts, which is really a direct agreement between you and TIAA, then you'll be able to leave your money in those contracts in the annuities. But the new menu is where the existing or the future contributions are going to go. And so what the committee did is apply the investment policy statement to all the funds in the plan. And the reality is there are a lot of funds that are not what the committee would consider to be best in class. And so those are being replaced with better funds. And when I say better funds, it typically means a combination of more consistent returns, lower cost, and expectation for better returns over time. So the new platform will be where all new funds are going. The old TIA legacy contracts will remain if you choose to keep them.
So we'll have to update like what funds our contributions will be going to for future investments then.
Correct. So okay. So there will be notification. There's going to be great detail about this. I'm obviously hitting everything on a pretty high level, but there will be a lot of detail about exactly what's going to happen and when. But essentially, there will be a window opened up where you can go in online, see the new menu that's offered on the TIA platform and on the Fidelity platform. It'll be essentially the same on both for the most part. And you'll be able to build a new allocation there if you'd like, or if you There's a target date fund suite that will be offered. And if you'd rather use the target date funds, you'll automatically be defaulted there unless you build your own allocation. So you absolutely can do that if you'd like. If you don't want to do anything, then you'll be defaulted into the age appropriate target date fund.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Can you explain why there was only two women on the focus group out of all the faculty you had?
I can't. I didn't select the group.
Eddie Chang from Mathematics Statistics. I have a question. Okay, please tell me that for the changes in TIA craft, you guys did not replace the current TIA traditional with the retirement choice TIA traditional.
Yeah, retirement choice, you're saying the more liquid version?
Yes, I know that TIAA has been pushing a newer one. It's called retirement choice. Right. It is slightly more liquid, but the guarantee rate is lower than the 3%.
Correct. It's 1 to 3, yeah.
Right. So can you tell me a little bit about it? Did you replace it with the new retirement choice? If so, yes. It's a very bad idea.
The old product is still available on the old platform, so you'll have to access it there.
But can I still contribute to it? That's the main thing. My understanding is when some university, when they switch to the retirement choice, they can no longer put more money into the old platform. They can continue to use it for the money is already there, but they cannot put new money there. So my question to you is, can I still put money into the old platform?
Not new money, but you can allocate old money to it.
All right. I must say that I'm extremely disappointed.
Can we know a little bit more why?
Yes, I can tell you a little bit more why. The current contract TIAA traditional that we have, there's a guarantee of 3%. And the new retirement choice, the guarantee rate is lower. I think it's 1.5%. I'm not exactly sure, but it's lower than 3%. So that's why I said I'm very disappointed.
Kelly, it's Ron. If you could just also explain that with respect to the funds that have been identified, the opportunity to go in and into the portal and select other options if they choose to do so.
Yeah, thanks, Ron. So there'll be a what's called a mutual fund window. So if the core funds, what we refer to as the core funds, if you want to use something different than that, there's several thousand other funds that you'll have the opportunity to choose from through the mutual fund windows.
Do we have any other comment?
Yes, this is Mary Craig from Biology. I'm wondering if TIAA CREF will have individuals that we can still speak to about our funds so that we can maximize. We had that option to go in and speak with an individual to direct our funds better. Is that still going to be available?
Yes.
Okay. I have another question. Whatever funds are available, are they going to be S&P 500 index fund and the basic, international index funds?
Yes, there's an S&P index and an international index available, yes.
Thank you.
Kelly, we have another question from John Corso Esquivel in the chat. It says, are there different index funds or are these all managed?
No, there are active managers and index funds, both are available.
Any other questions? Okay, let's go ahead and move on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. I really appreciate it. So we now have a very important land acknowledgement presentation by Megan Pizer and by our 2020 Distinguished Undergraduate Award winner, Ashley Duby. So if you guys could go ahead. I know that Andrea couldn't be here with us today and is very much here in spirit.
Yes, thank you. Just CEO and Wadeo, everybody, as already introduced, my name is Ashley Duby. I am an English STEP undergraduate student here at OU, and I am also a Cherokee woman, so my pronouns are she, her. If you want to go to the next slide, please. Today, we're here to talk to you about a land acknowledgement that we have been developing for Oakland University. So really quickly, I'd like to just go ahead and verbalize what we have so far. It's important to note that this has been going through many different changes and ebbs and flows. And so there is a possibility that this language will continue to be further updated. But as of right now, what we have is this. Oakland University resides on the ancestral, traditional, and contemporary lands of the Anishinaabe, known as the Three Fires Confederacy, comprised of the Ojibwa, the Odawa, and the Potawatomi. The land was ceded in the 1807 Treaty of Detroit and makes up Southeast Michigan. In recognizing the history and respecting the sovereignty of Michigan's Indian nations, Oakland University honors the heritage of Indigenous communities and their significant role in shaping the course of this region. Further, we recognize the wrongs done to those forcibly removed from their homelands and commit to fostering an environment of inclusion that is responsive to the needs of First Peoples through our words, policies, and actions. The preservation and perpetuation of customs and traditions of Indigenous nations are essential to our shared cultural heritage. A deep understanding of Native peoples past and present informs the teaching, research, and community engagement of the university and its ongoing effort to elevate the dignity of all people and serve as shared stewards of the land. And if you could go to the next slide, please. So we have been working on this land acknowledgement for close to 2 years. While Megan, who will speak next, will tell you about the importance of the land acknowledgement and why it is vital for OU to adopt it as a formal statement in this moment, I would like to explain the background and the process around creating this statement. So the process it went through, an Indigenous student in the School of Health Sciences wrote the first draft of the statement in an honors college course. We then worked in an ad hoc committee composed of myself and faculty members where we did further research into the people of this land and the history surrounding them. It is important to note that this committee had two Indigenous individuals working on the statement, both myself and Megan. Then we made sure to have Indigenous community members examine and review the statement in regards to language, accuracy, and impact. Those community members include elders in the Metro Detroit area, tribal leaders in Michigan, and leaders from the American Indian Health and Family Services Center in Detroit. This document is based on Indigenous voices. Land acknowledgements significantly can be inherently colonial statements if they are not crafted and approved by Indigenous members for larger communities. Indigenous voices have always mattered and continue to matter. And so this statement not only proves that, but also the process we have gone through to craft this statement as well. And then I'll hand it over to Megan.
Thanks so much, Ashley. Halito, soho chivo ya Dr. Megan Pizer, chata oyosia. Hello, my name is Dr. Megan Pizer, and I am a Choctaw woman. So far in the process of raising awareness, educating, and advocating for this land acknowledgement, we've had conversations with various members around the campus community. We've met with Glenn McIntosh, Chad Martinez, Dean Corcoran, Dean Shively, and the DEI Council. We've also had conversations with the Faculty Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee, and we've spoken with the Senate Steering Committee. Revisions, as Ashley noted, to the original draft have been undertaken with tribal leaders in Michigan, the DEI Council, and in a conversation with our president's office. We'd like to see a lot of things emerge from this effort on our campus, like a celebration of Indigenous Peoples Day, or event programming for Native American Heritage Month, which is in November, community partnerships, curricula, student services, an employee resource group, scholarships and research support, and of course, all kinds of other things that might grow organically from a foundation like this. We want the land acknowledgement to be a living document, to be a tool that we can come to, return to again and again for educating and to build a welcoming and supportive environment here for our Native faculty, staff, students and the broader Indigenous community here in Michigan. And Ashley and I are just one example of that community. We know each other from the Indian Center in Detroit, as well as our relationship here at Oakland University. So I think that's what we have for y'all in a formal way. And we would love to answer any questions that you have about the land acknowledgement or our process in writing and revising it.
I think it reads beautifully, just my opinion, humble opinion. I think it really reads beautifully, and it shows that you've taken so much time and collective and have incorporated collective voices in crafting a really important message. Are there any questions on the land acknowledgement presentation? I see a Go Ashley in the chat. So go Ashley. And then this is Patty Bill said, this is beautiful work. Thank you. How do you envision the statement being used, and to whom will it be available and when?
So I think both Megan and I can answer this together. Part of so we can kind of model what other universities have done with land acknowledgements, but we can also take it a step further. So most of the time with universities and land acknowledgements, they have them posted on the website, on different, course, when we're looking at syllabi, they'll it'll be advised for professors to possibly incorporate it into their email signatures. It's spoken at the beginning of events. So it is definitely a statement that can and should permeate through all of the different cultures and sections of a university in regards to visibility. You should be able to see the statement almost everywhere in regards to relationship with OU. But then I know especially Andrea and Megan have talked extensively about how it can also further be used on campus outside of just that regular university norm.
That's so right, Ashley. I think some of the work that a land acknowledgement does is it makes Indigenous people visible again. We've been purposefully obscured from most spaces and histories, and often don't feel welcome in public institutional spaces such as universities. And we would love for our Native students, faculty, and staff to feel like they belong here. I think it's also an important work of naming names. And when you put names to things, when you say things, put words to things and say them out loud, it's a healing process. And the atrocities that Native peoples have been the victims of for thousands of years, hundreds of years in this country, is work of healing that is not just for Native people. Settler descendants need that healing too. And when we name these events and name the presence of Native people, we're able to heal together. And that's important community work for us all to do. And all the students at our campus, all the faculty and staff deserve the right to have a relationship with the land, to have a healed relationship with the Native community, and to reap the benefits of an Indigenous future. And a land acknowledgement helps us imagine that.
Great, and there are a number of congratulatory items in the chat talking about the great work. It's wonderful, well-crafted, thanking you. It's tremendously important work. Just the echo of using this on email signatures so that folks know the history of our campus. A true honor to voice this recognition of Indigenous peoples. So thank you very, very much. Do we have any other questions on the land acknowledgement? And I see Michelle, I see your hand up.
Thank you. Yes, I echo the sentiments that have been shared thus far. I guess my question, and I'm not sure if this was answered, is where would this document ultimately be showcased or housed? I understand that having the information in our emails and in documents, but is there a commitment to have this information located someplace where it shows the dedication of the institution in a larger format? That's my question.
That's such a great question, Michelle, and one that we're continuing to work towards. I think part of these questions are where does it belong? Where does it reside? Ashley already noted that a lot of universities put this statement on the university home website, or institutions put it on like the DEI offices website, but it's certainly something that we would love to see brought up in events or shared around campus, perhaps in the OC. The first step is getting this land acknowledgement approved, and then we can start working towards all of the excellent things I'm seeing y'all suggest in the chat about, you know, we can't have a gen ed class until we hire more Indigenous faculty to speak towards these things. There are departments around campus that are teaching towards Native issues, but of course we would like to see more. I personally am reticent to support more at an institution that doesn't have a land acknowledgement. So this first step is super duper important for all of these Indigenous futures that I see y'all dreaming up in the chat that are really beautiful.
Thank you.
And Ashley, I really appreciated when you read this in the very beginning because the pronunciation came through so clearly. So thank you. And Patty Bill said, you know, I would like to use this statement at the start of each semester in my classes and in the diversity work I do on campus. Would you be available to help me or us with pronunciations so we can do that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a resource, but also something that could be very easy to do is that almost a lot of Indigenous tribes and nations and people create YouTube videos for this exact same reason. So finding those viable like resources, you can find them through Facebook is a great location, or just like searching like how to correctly pronounce this tribe's name. That's a great place to start. And because outside of just, you know, I'm Cherokee, right? I'm not Anishinaabe, even though this is that's the core group of people that I work with, because those are the people who are in the area. Like finding those resources, because they have already published them to make them so available. But also, I'm always available to email and talk with this over as well. And then I'm just seeing so much of like, is there a gen ed class, like education sessions offered on how to use this properly? That would be, that's a great goal to have. And just to echo what Megan said, just in her presentation, Oakland University is really kind of far behind in this work compared to other universities and other institutions. Like, I won't sugarcoat that. So we don't have a general education class. We don't even acknowledge Indigenous Peoples Day or Native American Heritage Month, like one of the most basic fundamental things we could do as a university. So we're really building from the ground up here. And so talking about, you know, possibly having a gen education class just about the history of the land in relationship with Indigenous people, that's an amazing thing I want to work towards. Education sessions, we can definitely talk about that as a committee on maybe holding one or a couple, or having, you know, guests talk about just like, yes, how to use this respectfully, because it can be misused, you know, in different facets. So those are just great suggestions.
Great. And, you know, one thing that I would love to see is that it's on a plaque commemorating a certain part of campus so that yes. people can read it all the time. And it's
that's
there.
Yeah, that's what I really wanted to see too. Like, that would be awesome. Just an actual like a piece of the land and a visual part. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe different places have tossed around the idea of possibly having it in housing, for example, because that's actually having people live on this land, you know, possibly somewhere in Wilson Hall, or even better, the OC, because that's where people are walking. You know, we have this big brand of like the seal that people walk on to remind them that they're on Oakland University's land. We should be putting that effort as equally towards actually acknowledging the longer history of the land too.
Absolutely. And Sumi Dinda has his hand up.
Yeah, I was just wondering if it is possible to put a plaque in the main gate, because that's where people see it when you come in, right?
That's such a great suggestion. I love all of y'all's suggestions. And I think my favorite thing is hearing how much solidarity there is from y'all, how much support there is behind this land acknowledgement statement. Because as Ashley said, we've been working on this for years and we're really behind other Michigan universities. And so we need to be moving forward so that we can illustrate to our Indigenous communities that we really are allies, that we're all a people together here in Michigan. I also love Ken's note here in the chat about learning about the physical land that Oakland sits on. We actually are very fortunate that in our special collections in Kresge Library, we have a wonderful resource of maps of Michigan as they were, as the land was used and related to by Indigenous peoples before settlers arrived. So these are all options and opportunities for us in the future, but are only things that we can build with cross-campus support and with cross-campus solidarity with this effort. And I do just want to say that a lot of these things will possibly look different than you're used to them looking, because if you're used to systems that are settler colonialist systems, part of being in solidarity with Indigenous peoples means using Indigenous knowledge systems and Indigenous structures to educate and to support one another and to be allies to our plant animal relatives in this land. And so I am excited about all the support that I'm seeing here in the chat for the wonderful, beautiful things that we could do for our campus community. I actually don't know the answer to your question here, Jean. Does OU have any agreements with the tribal colleges in Michigan? I don't know if you're referring to perhaps like transfer credits or community relationships there. I'm actually not sure. And if Ashley, if you have more knowledge about that, if you'll jump in. You know, I know that University of Michigan has done a lot of work with Indigenous communities. And one of the first things that we have to do if we want to move forward in this vein is to build a relationship with Native peoples of this land. And currently Native peoples have no reason to trust Oakland University. Trust and relationship building is slow, and a land acknowledgement is a first step. But an important thing that settler colonialist institutions also have to do is to put their actions behind their words. Native peoples have been hurt for hundreds of years by broken treaties, and we might have to just be patient while Native peoples see that Oakland is changing, is making these steps towards supporting Indigenous communities and supporting Indigenous futures, which are healthy for everyone and for our planet.
Great. Any other questions or comments? Okay, I just want to thank Megan and Ashley and Andrea for bringing this issue to the community, to our community, and also keeping it alive and sustaining it through. And I just want to say on behalf of Academic Affairs, we should be having an event. I'm hoping that we will in November, and help us plan it in collaboration with Glenn and his shop. And, you know, really, let's make this something that lives, not just something that gets hung up. And I'm very moved by what you've done, and I'm moved by the wording. And I think this is a fundamental, you know, when I think about Matilda Dodge Wilson, who we love so much, and we see her statue, and it's just a part of who we are. This is also a part that needs to be acknowledged and recognized and incorporated into our history. So we are now going to have a brief reminder about Senate committee volunteer opportunities from Cynthia.
All right, so good afternoon. I'm just doing the public service announcement to remind everyone to please sign up for a Senate committee. A number of emails have gone out to full-time faculty. We also sent it to department chairs so that you can work with your faculty to help guide them and answer any questions that they might have. And so again, please make sure that anyone who is interested in an opportunity takes advantage of that opportunity. Thank you.
And I just wanna thank everyone who's been involved in making African American History Month such an amazing experience on Oakland's campus. I've been able to participate in several events, and I was able to attend a meeting, and I'm just really excited about the direction that we're going in. and really appreciate that. We are going to be sending out a monthly communication from Academic Affairs. This month, it's just going to be a message from me featuring some faculty. And as we move through, we're, you know, and I'm a strong believer in perfect is the enemy of good. So we're going to try to send out a good message next month and just keep making it better and better and more responsive to the needs of faculty as we go along. And does anyone have, I know I've been working with a number of you on different things, and as I've been walking around campus, just seeing the very, very impressive facilities that we have, as well as the need for more of those impressive facilities. So yesterday I was in the College of Health Sciences, or the School of Health Sciences, I'm sorry, with Kristen and Kevin. And again, just so impressed by the different things that we're doing and the opportunities for stewardship of place and community engagement. So those are my updates. Are there any questions? Does anyone have any questions or comments? Any at all? Okay, I don't see any hands. So Xander, tell me if I'm not seeing something I should.
So no hands here.
Okay, great. So Dicka, do we have a quorum?
Yes, we do.
Great. So we want to move on to the approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Don't move. Ron Tracy.
Great. Thank you, Ron. Is there a second?
Ellen Gajewski, I second the motion.
Thank you, Ellen. There is a motion and second to approve the minutes. Is there any discussion? No discussion. So let's go ahead and move to a vote. Xander, can you please remind everyone how they vote?
Yeah, so if you click, and I'll put up a little instruction slide real quick if you want me to. If you click the reaction button at the bottom of the screen, you will see your options to vote. You'll see a green check mark and a red X. Here we go. And that's how you'll vote.
For some people who have an older version, they actually have to click on participants to get the yes check mark. It doesn't appear under reactions for everyone.
Okay, yep. So if you are running an older version of Zoom, that's correct. It'll be under this participants tab right here, and then you'll see it at the bottom of that window that pops up.
We are at 26 yes, 0 no.
Are there any other votes to be registered? Xander, are we good to go?
Yeah, I think so. I think 26 was the highest I saw that number get to.
Yes, correct. 26 was the highest.
Perfect. Thank you, Kate. So our first item under new business is coming from the Committee on Faculty Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. So Committee Chair Jason Wasserman, you have the floor.
Hi, thanks very much. So along with Joni Lipson-Fried, I chair the faculty Committee on Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. And so we have the privilege of putting forward a resolution for in principle support of the land acknowledgement statement that you just heard. So my role is really perfunctory. The work was obviously really done by Ashley and Megan and Andrea and others, but it came to our committee for some discussion. Our committee unanimously endorsed it and provided a letter of support. And so as a faculty senate, standing faculty senate committee, we're bringing it to you in the form of a resolution to solicit in principle support. This is my first time introducing a resolution. Do I literally read the resolution? Is that correct? Yes, okay. So do we have the resolution? I think the text was sent out, is what I'm told. If not, I can share the screen, or I can just.
Have it, Xander. You just need to pull it up on the eSpace.
I think that's.
There we go. This might be the simplest resolution you'll see all year. So here we go, I'll read it. Whereas the colonialization of North America by European settlers, which has systematically displaced, destroyed, and devalued Native people, continues to shape the contexts in which we work, teach, learn, and build community today. And whereas Oakland University resides on land ceded in the 1807 Treaty of Detroit, which is the ancestral, traditional, and contemporary lands of the Anishinaabe people, also known as the Three Fires Confederacy, comprised of the Ojibwe, Odawa, and Potawatomi. And whereas a land acknowledgement statement does not constitute in and of itself a form of redress, but can inspire reflection and reconsideration about how we approach this history within our curricula, our policies, and our relationships with one another and the broader community. Therefore, be it resolved that the Oakland University Senate offers its support for the adoption and widespread use of a land acknowledgement statement developed in collaboration with Native communities as one part of a larger ongoing effort to educate the university community and redress historical and present injustices toward Native people.
Thank
you. So with that, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you very much. So this is the first reading, and as such, it is amendable, debatable, but not eligible for final vote at this meeting. Are there any questions or comments on the resolution?
Can we move to waive the second reading?
I second, Eddie Chan.
No, I'm asking if we can.
Oh, okay. We can. We absolutely can.
I'm making a motion.
Okay, then I move to waive the second reading. John Marjoram Lays.
And I second, Eddie Chan.
Okay, so the second reading has been moved to be waived, and we'll ask the Senate now to vote on the resolution. So Mike?
Don't we need to read the motion before we vote?
Should we read it once more?
No, the motion,
We need to vote on whether to waive or whether to go to second reading.
Right.
So we need to vote on that first, and then we vote on the motion.
Okay, great. So could we vote on waiving, all in favor of waiving the second reading? Please vote accordingly.
You're at 40 yes, 0 no.
Okay, great. So now that we have waived the second reading, can we vote on approval of the resolution?
Shouldn't we discuss it again first? I saw a comment in the chat. Oh, okay. This is Leila Gassous, by the way.
Leila, thank you so much. I didn't see the comment. So the document talks three times about Native people and Native communities. I thought the most common and preferred term nowadays was Native American, or perhaps even Indigenous.
Yes, they may not still be here. I think that my understanding is that there are numerous terms and there are people that have different preferences. But what I think is also important is that the language of this document, both the resolution and the original land acknowledgement, was developed in close collaboration with the communities in this area. And so I think personally, I don't know the ins and outs of those different terms, but I would defer to those local communities.
Yeah, hi, this is Joni Lipson-Fried. I can just really quickly add to that the because as Jason is saying, this is an in principle support for the statement. The specific language of the statement isn't we have a sort of a working draft of it, but that the whole process has been very much driven by Native faculty and students here at Oakland in collaboration with the larger community. So like Jason, I think that there's it's appropriate to defer to them in the choice of language that they have used. And our resolution here reflects the language that we've seen in the version of the statement that's currently available.
John has put up a little more information there that I think is helpful. And
okay, so John states, what is the correct terminology? American Indian, Indian, Native American, or Native? All of these terms are acceptable. The consensus, however, is that whenever possible, Native people prefer to be called by their specific tribal name. In the United States, Native American has been used widely, but is falling out of favor with some groups, and the terms American Indian or Indigenous American are preferred by many Native people.
Mary Craig, biology. I am actually an Odawa Indian. I'm a quarter blood. And I would say that the language as drafted is appropriate to what I know from the Odawa, but I'm not Ojibwa or Chippewa. So, but the Odawa would use the language there.
Any other comment?
Leila Gassous, in the presentation, it was mentioned that they did consult with different tribes and organizations. So I would assume that that wording then would seem to be okay if it was developed in conjunction with them.
One of your boards.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else would like to opine?
I just want to highlight the message in the chat here that's coming from one of the members of the working group that is developing the statement that speaks to this as well.
Yeah. And thank you for reiterating that. I think that's what I knew, that Native American is something we developed. It's kind of like Hispanic, right? It was developed by the census with a committee of folks networked to those who could have the power to make those decisions at the time. So and John's reminding us 1970 census, Richard Nixon. Anything else? I myself think it's very well written. So thank you. So if we're good, can we go ahead and move to vote and adopt the resolution? Do we have a motion?
This is Erin Myers. I move to adopt the resolution.
Great, do we have a second?
Yeah, this is Ellen Gajewski. I second the motion.
Okay, Xander, can we call a vote? Or can you monitor the vote? I'm calling
yes. You. Please vote now.
Yes.
We are at 37 yes, 0 no.
Great. Okay. Well, I think that we adopted the resolution. So great job, everyone. I think it really speaks to the history, and I think it will, it's very, very meaningful. So thank you. Let's move forward to a procedural motion to staff Senate committees. Is there a motion for that?
So moved.
Is there a second?
I second the motion. Ellen Gajewski.
Thank you, Ellen. Xander?
Aye.
Can you clarify who made the motion?
That would be Mike Latcha.
Oh, Latcha. Okay, thank you.
And Ellen seconded it. So please indicate your support.
Yes, 33 yes, 0 no.
Great. Okay, now we'll move on to Good and Welfare. If you have an item for Good and Welfare, please raise your hand. Julia.
Thank you. I had a hard time finding my hand. So this is Julia Rodriguez. I am the Scholarly Communications Librarian and also the team lead for the Affordable Course Materials Initiative on campus, which you may not have heard about for a couple of years, at least during this COVID time. But I did want to just let everybody know that we have wrapped up our first round of faculty stipends. And we had five faculty members who were given mini grants to convert their courses to free and low cost materials. This was made available by the provost giving us $5,000 to initiate our work. And we're able, at this point, we're putting together totals, but the pilot project has saved roughly between $13,000 and $38,000 in one semester for students. So I just want to invite everybody to attend presentations by three of the stipend faculty that are going to happen on March 3rd from 12 to 1. It's going to be virtual. And I will drop in the chat how you can register for that and an additional link for more about the Affordable Course Materials Initiative if you're not aware of it.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Julia. We also have Dave Duilio.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for the opportunity to share just a little bit of information. As you may remember, last year, OU added three community engagement awards to the list of awards that are given every year on campus. There's one award each for faculty, staff, and a community partner. Last year's recipients were Jennifer Lucarelli, who I think is still here on the call as faculty member, Suzanne Rossi on the staff side, and the community partner award went to Coco Mulder, a community outreach specialist at the Wellness Plan in Pontiac. The selection committee, which is made up of Diane Baldwin, Maria Beam, Rebecca Cheesham, Willie Dorsey, Faye Hansen, Stephanie Lee, Angelica Millay, Dave Stone, Wayne Thibodeau, and me, would like to ask you to consider nominating colleagues and or community partners for these awards. COVID has impacted us in so many ways, but outstanding work in the community has continued, and in some cases even increased over the last year. There are numerous individuals at OU who are making a real impact in the community, and we as an institution want to recognize and reward that. I will put a link in the chat that will give you information about these awards, as well as the other awards made by OU. The Phyllis Law Gagazian Award, the Monica E. Emerson Diversity Award, the Timothy G. Larrabee Soji Equity and Inclusion Award, the Outstanding AP of the Year Award, the Rising AP Award, the New Professional AP Award, and the Sharon Wilhelm Excellence Award, oh, and the Team Award. The link will also have for you how you can nominate folks, certainly for the Community Engagement Awards, and give you more information on the rest. Thanks.
Thank you, Dave. Any other items for Good and Welfare? Okay, if there are no further items, we can go ahead and adjourn. I wish you all a wonderful break. Whether you're working on research, an article, taking a vacation, catching up on grading, whatever it is, I really wish you a very productive and relaxing at the same time break. And hope that you're safe and watch out for the variants in the meantime as these nasty things are popping up. Please be careful. And we will see you soon. Thank you.